Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
Doing well. I stayed up all night worrying about who the next Supreme Court justice
oh,
would
no.
be. Just kidding. But I did pay attention, as the whole country has gained, was paying a lot of attention. But, you know, when that happens, when they can get everybody in the country to concentrate on a single issue, I keep wondering, what's really going on in some hidden place in the world? Because real government works in secrecy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I sort of come down on the side of that in this issue, too. Kavanaugh is a big name. Everybody sort of knows about him now. And it's a big, big battle between Republicans and Democrats. So it's a big, big issue. At the same time, though, I don't even think the people are looking at the important thing, because they talk about what we have to do is eliminate this fringe element, you know, the radical right and the radical left. Yet I work from a position in Congress that there was a radical center,
mm-hmm.
because they're authoritarians, they're interventionists, they're pro-war, pro-Fed, and all this other stuff was just sort of fluff. But important, because politically speaking, but I think there's a lot of this stuff that they feed to the people. And I recall that I never thought Boehner and Pelosi were enemies,
yeah.
arch enemies. Remember, they used to be able to put a budget together
yeah.
when nobody else was looking,
yeah.
and they'd throw it out there. And I think philosophically, it probably doesn't matter a whole lot. Now, that's almost blasphemy, you know, for conservatives right now who are very energetic. And I can believe that. I mean, I can see it. I sort of have my emotions saying, you know, who wants these other clowns
yeah.
to win? But in reality, you know, I know you'll mention a few things. When we go over Kavanaugh's position, they're not all that great. So when you see the world in terms of authoritarianism and non-authoritarianism and voluntarism, all of a sudden there's a big, big difference. And I guess the first thing that alerted me to this was the fact that the Bush family was strongly in favor of this guy. And then when you look at his positions, if you're looking at it from a libertarian viewpoint and moving closer to libertarianism, you might be able to find one issue here or there, but you can find that from a liberal judge too. There's
yeah.
been a few liberal judges that would throw us a bone too on something libertarian. So this is an issue, though, that I find interesting, but I don't think it's as earth-shattering as it's made out to be. But I guess I have to say that I have a little bit of sympathy for the for the radical right rather than the radical left,
yeah.
but I'm still going to look at this as evaluating how much closer would a Kavanaugh move us toward a free society, and I have questions.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, as you point out, he worked for the Bush family. He worked for Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush. Then he worked for a long time for George W. Bush, his president. He's very close to the Bush family, apparently close to Karl Rove. So when we were talking about the show and you mentioned the radical center, I didn't quite get it at first, but then you explained, and the point is that is true. The radical center is authoritarian. The differences are more in terms of stylistic differences than a real fundamental philosophical difference, and he falls right into that camp.
But it's the principle of it all. So a lot of times when I would talk about welfare policies, they say, well, and conservatives say, we have a heart too, we care about the poor, but they don't defend the free market because the free market feeds more people than the authoritarian welfare state. But if you say, well, if we want to endorse the principle of the transfer of wealth to help the needy, I think that's 100% of the principle.
Yeah.
And you're lost from there on, because the 1% who truly need it becomes 2%, and it encourages people not to work. Right now, I just saw a statistic this morning with there's a lot of employment going on right now, but a lot of people are dropping out. They don't want to work, you know, because of the status that we have. So the welfare state is the principle. So that's why I talk about the radical center, because it's the principle thing. It's not the individual issues. But in many ways, there are some things that Kavanaugh believes in that maybe would soften up some Democrats. You know, his position on Obamacare. You know, the work that he did. For Kennedy, I guess, or that threw the vote to in favor of Obama.
And that's one of the things when you see Schumer and Pelosi screaming and their hair is on fire, running down the street. You know that it's a lot of it is for show. They're expected to act this way no matter who he nominated for that position. That's just the role that they've taken on in this sort of great play called the radical center. Because you're right, the Obama mandate, you know better than I do, his dissent was that it was a tax. He essentially saved it because of that. There are others. The Hobby Lobby issue, too, was another. You would think that the left would be thinking, gosh, we got a good one here.
Well, the one that really is important, and both parties endorse, that the inherent presidential authority, you know, that he's the president's the commander in chief. And now they're actually getting ready in Congress to expand that, you know, with the rules to use military force.
Yeah,
and that is very, very dangerous. And that's dictatorial in many ways. And we've been living that way ever since 9/11. It's been longer than that. Congress has reneged on their responsibility when it comes to the war issues. But this inherent presidential power is, I think, very, very dangerous. And he's supportive of this. And then when it came to the National Security Agency, he doesn't really believe in the Fourth Amendment. I mean, the giving up of all this. And his reason was that if it was necessary, the conditions were such that it was important, the global war on terrorism, which is, once again, the old theme is that when you're in war, you give up your civil liberties. And, of course, they take them from us anyway. But the global war on terrorism is on forever. So then he's not going to get in the way of the executive branch use of spying and keeping records on all American citizens.
You know, I think that is the critical issue. On the NSA mass surveillance, it was exposed by Ed Snowden. We found out that they were listening to everything. Not only that, they were storing everything in a facility for at least 5 years. And he refused, as a judge, he refused to hear a case against that program. He said that this massive, massive hoovering up of our info was not a search. Don't worry about it. It wasn't a search. But, and this goes further, this is what you were saying, even if it was a search, no problem, because the president had a special need because of the need to prevent terrorism overrode our civil liberties. This is essentially what he found. That's probably the most glaring and most fundamental and troubling. And actually, Senator Paul took him on this, and there was a great piece about how Cusinelli represented Paul in challenging this idea that somehow we give up all of our Constitution when the president declares, not even declares, but suggests that we're at war.
I hear the argument constantly in relationship to this as well, that the extremists on the far right and far left, Republican, Democrats, have to cave in, become decent people, and merge to the center, which I call the radical center. But in doing this, of course, it makes it look appealing, because this, you know, the right wing now are the Nazis, and the left wing, I don't know what they are. They're Nazis too. You know? Who knows? They're authoritarians, they're radical authoritarians, and everybody thinks that's it. But it really, the challenge is here in the middle. And I think what is happening, that the far left and far right and those people who don't fit into the middle, they have maybe more convictions and more determination maybe for a society that we're not looking for. And chaos is their theme. The more chaos we have, and it looks like it can be an opportunity for these groups to cause the chaos. And just think of the street battles that are going on now. Mm. And it isn't the radical center that's causing the street battle. They sell out on our liberties, but there it is these groups on the far extreme that want to stir up the trouble. But I think their goal isn't, it's philosophic, but it isn't the conventional philosophy of conservatives versus liberals. I think it's people who would like to restructure our whole society. And sometimes people refer to it as cultural Marxism.
Yeah,
and believe me, I believe that this is it's getting bad. You know, some days I look at it on positive things. Oh, this is. We've been, you know, acting like this for a lot of years, and this is the way the world works, and this is human nature. But right now, I think there's every reason why people should get concerned about the people who stir up this kind of trouble, because it is getting more violent. And, you know, when you see and I believe it, the both ends have their faults, but it just looks to me like the extremists on the left are more willing to use violence. And but the other side, they're not angels either.
Yeah. It's interesting you talk about this, because in a way you see kind of a symbiosis between the violent radical right and left and the radical center. Because no matter when the radical right and left get involved in battles such as this, it really benefits the radical center, because they can expand their authoritarianism, expand authoritarian rule, expand the police state. So there's a weird symbiosis between the two, and that's why when we come in saying there's a completely different way, you don't have to be an alt-right, you don't have to be a cultural Marxist left, you don't have to be the radical center, there's a different philosophical approach, and it's called liberty.
Oh yeah, and the purpose is to make the center look moderate and reasonable and conciliatory, and you get along. And in economics, that's it too. The free market is radical and extreme and selfish and all these things. But then there's the communists, and they're terrible too, because they want to own everything and control every price there is. So that is why interventionism, the planned economy, the inflation economy, the central bank economy, the deficit economy, they say, we're the moderates, come with us, we're okay. And when you analyze it, whether it's a foreign policy, the endorsement of our foreign policy, or the endorsement of our economic policy and our financial system and the Federal Reserve, I mean, it is a radical change from what a free society would be all about, or even the society that the founders attempted to give us, you know, in the Constitution. That was to be much more modest. But this debate, quite frankly, has been going on a long time. You know, it originated right after they wrote the Constitution, but it's gotten to a danger point, because I think our country is bankrupt. I think our ideas are bankrupt. The ideas of welfareism doesn't work, and property ownership is a farce, and taxation is out of control. So the ideas are bankrupt, the people are bankrupt, and people are getting scared, and they're looking around, and they're getting scared of the right, they're getting scared of the left. Oh, we all have to be in the middle and use our authoritarian in a positive way.
Yeah. That's it, you know. And I went back and looked at a speech that Kavanaugh gave to the Marquette Law School, and he didn't talk a lot about war powers. I was looking for more, but there was a little bit there, and I think it kind of, from a little bit that was in the speech, indicated his position, as you would say, firmly in the radical center. He said, "Yeah, Congress is involved in war. They have responsibilities in war. They make regulations." He said, "Quote, for the most part, presidents follow the statutes regarding war."
Right.
You know, so he has no concerns about Congress completely falling down and giving the president, you know, executive power to take us to war. It doesn't seem to be a big issue. He says, overall, everything is pretty much okay.
Well, you know, I sent my recommendation in to the president, and he did not respond.
Oh, no.
Because I forgot my stamp. But I suggested he appoint Judge Napolitano.
That's a good choice.
You know, that would have been pretty nice, but that was never a consideration. And then I said, why don't you use the models Clarence Thomas? He's a pretty good guy.
Yeah.
And he's about the most libertarian on there. He's very independent-minded and very thoughtful. But you know what? What disappoints me in this struggle is, you know, the racist issue comes up all the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think that the people who talk the loudest about it are the ones that are the most racist. Because how often have we heard the far left praise Walter Williams,
yeah,
or Tom Sowell or Clarence Thomas? They can't stand these people. So if you're successful and your skin is black, you don't count. You've just excommunicated yourself. I consider that a bit of racism that people don't want to admit to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we mentioned Jonathan Turley before.
Yeah.
And that's someone who we've admired. He spoke at your your famous lunches back on Capitol Hill. And he had a piece today, and he had a piece in the Hill and a piece on his blog, generally positive toward Kavanaugh. But a couple of things that he pointed out in today's piece and in a previous piece, and I guess those are the things that would concern us the most. And here's what he said. His opinion on the NSA surveillance, right, quote, represents a sweeping view of national security as an exception to core constitutional protections.
Yeah, you know, I listened to Kavanaugh's speech after he was nominated, and he said some good things in there. He said that the courts should never legislate. But there's already questions. You know, this whole idea that the presidential authority is open-ended in the time of a crisis, like if there's a terrorist in the world someplace, and therefore you have to collect this information. And also, you know, the willingness, because he worked on this issue of Obamacare, justifying Obamacare, and he says, well, we should never legislate. We should just say, is it constitutional or not? Well, if you were a constitutionalist, where would you get the authority for the government to be involved in medical care? You know, it's just unconstitutional. That's it. Oh, no, this is different. But we have to preserve it. So what we're going to do is this so-called penalty, which they were recognized penalties. Oh, they're unconstitutional. So, but if we call it a tax, that's what we'll do. We'll say it's a tax on people who don't do what we tell them, and that's not a penalty. All taxes are penalties if we don't do what we're told.
Yeah.
So, and so there's a lot of room in here. But once again, that they endorse interventionism and authoritarianism in the center, because that's why they come together. They just have to divvy up all the powers. But at times, and I think the reason the fights go on is what I said. I think the whole thing is bankrupt. You know, the medical care system is bankrupt, and our civil liberties, in a way, are bankrupt. Nobody protects them. And the foreign policy, you know, we talk so much about that and the loss of, you know, credibility around the world. So I think it's ideological, and we have to decide, you know, what kind of a society we want to live in. We know exactly what we think should be beneficial. But those who I was talking about that like chaos, because they could usher in utopia and you know, have a different society, they have a different idea. And they may be very sincere. You know, they may say, well, you know, look at what liberty has given us.
Yeah.
Look at the chaos. It gives us all the money accumulated in the 1% of people. They have the, now they're talking about one company being worth $1 trillion.
Yeah.
And at the same time, 50% of the people are still suffering.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would just conclude, if we're finished, essentially, is that, I mean, I think we need to remember that a lot of this is a sideshow. Everyone's going to play their role. Pelosi and Schumer are going to play their role. The Republicans are going to play their role. They're going to make a lot of noise. But at the end of the day, it's not going to mean much. It's not going to have much impact on our lives. And that's why I think we have to keep our eyes on the ball. We have to think outside of their box, of the mental prison that they've constructed, called the radical center. So we have to keep in focus what our goals are, which, as Dr. Paul says very often, are liberty and peace. And I also want to remind everyone again, there are still tickets left for our conference. I hate to have to hack this every day, but we want everyone to show up who can make it. RonPaulInstitute.org/conference will give you all the detail. I'm going to upload some new information with some new speakers announced today. So we look forward to seeing you August 18th in Washington, D.C.
Very good, Daniel. I wanted to thank all our viewers today for tuning in. I just want to close with making a point about who I think is most responsible for the conditions we have. Well, to me, they're ideological, and the people who write theories and are able to influence people. That's the big, broad thing. But what about, you know, in a more pragmatic way? Who is it? Is it because we have bad people in the Supreme Court? Well, we have people that disagree with libertarianism, and we know that. Well, how is our system supposed to deal with it? Well, it's available there. If the people don't like what's going on, they can sound, you know, they can speak out. And people's sentiments do have an influence on the court. But the other thing that has been severely lacking is the Congress assuming its responsibilities. It totally derelict in their responsibilities, because what they do is they totally ignore and acknowledge and acquiesce and give the president all these powers, whether it's a power for war, power to do trade deals. It just astounds me that one individual can write an executive border and put on $50 billion worth of tariffs just with a pen, the stroke of a pen. Now, that's not the way it was written in the Constitution. But what should be done? Well, if the people were awake and said only people are related to the people in Congress, they can repeal this kind of stuff. They can pass the law. They can deny the financing for some of these things. They can repeal regulations, and they can put a lot of pressure. And ultimately, though, if the educational system worked, and we had, and I think we're probably moving in the right direction, that maybe we would, you know, improve the judiciary. But we still have a long way to go to get the Napolitanos in office and get more help for Clarence Thomas. That is what we should be working for. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.